We are continuing our discussion on the human rights situation in the Philippines. We started with the cry of hope in the struggle for peace that was laid out by Atiya, particularly focusing on the effect on children, the effect of these human rights violations on children. And then we moved on to a presentation by Marie on the general context in which such violations occur, the political, the military, and the economic condition in the Philippines that makes impunity happen. And not just happen as by happenstance, but as a deliberate public policy that needs to be checked. This afternoon, we continue that framework, and I just like to put some threads to the move from the first panel to the second panel. Within the faith community, we claim that we have the duty to protect, and the duty to protect is the duty to protect the image of God in every person. That's the whole notion of dignity. But there's not only the duty, or duty to respect, I should say, each one's dignity. And that's I call that the moral duty. But there's also the duty to protect, which is the protection of human rights. In the United Methodist formulation, which I represent, we say that human dignity is God's gift to humankind. Human rights is our gift to ourselves. Because we say that in reverence to the image of God given to us, we promise to our God we will protect that dignity with rights. And when those rights, or when we fail to protect them, it's a failure in our ethical duty. So from moral duty to ethical duty. Now that's individual and collective. When it is the failure of the state to protect, then that's a far more serious problem. And that is what we want to look into. The failure of the nation, the state, to protect its own citizens. And so, this morning's session, the violation of the innocence represented by the children. Here, we're not about to let the Philippine government off the hook and say they were innocent. So, the collective representation of policies that make these violations happen. So we're very glad indeed that we have the two panelists that are going to be with us from 2:45 to 4:15. Kayleen has been creative in titling this panels "Mudslides and Community Burials." It's act of nature and act of humanity, or if you will, act of inhumanity. When mudslides bury populations, and when summary killings necessitate the burial of loved ones. So the combination of act of nature, of course, with our intervention on that nature as well as political action. And we have Bishop Eleazar Pascua, who is the General Secretary of the United Church of Christ in the Philippines. The United Church of Christ in the Philippines is the second largest Protestant body in the Philippines, next to the Philippine Independent Church, to which Bishop Alberto Ramento, who was recently killed, is a member. And before I call on him, actually I'd like to have the bishop as well as Father Joe Dizon to join me in the panel here. Is Father Joe already here? Yeah, he is here. Okay, if you can join me here. As they are taking their seats, I'd like to acknowledge now the presence of more members of the Asia-Pacific Forum and the Philippine Working Group. We have here the Reverend Christopher Ferguson from the World Council of Churches United Nations Office. And then we have here the Reverend David Wildman with the General Board of Global Ministries. Who else? Oh, yes, well, you know, he's he's very reverent. And then I already mentioned Rebecca Acedillo as well with the Board of Global Ministries. Are there any other members? No, I don't see. Okay, thank you. And then from Bishop Pascua, we will move to a presentation by Father Joe Dizon. I can very well remember way back in the mid-80s when my son was still 5 years old. We were rallying. My wife and I were tagging along my son Arvin, and he was wearing one like this, same color, in a rally. And Father Joe was there, one of the leading speakers. So when I see him again here, it's like he hasn't aged. But that was 1987, I believe, or 88. So that's some 19 years ago. And Father Joe will talk about foreign corporations, of those who have been killed, summarily killed, many also are union leaders. And Father Joe Dizon is the executive director of the Workers' Assistance Center, and he has founded this center way back in 1995 to provide services for workers in export processing zones. The area where he works is the area where Walmart, JCPenney, Gap, and many others get the jeans and the shirts that some of you perhaps wear. And he will talk about that, because there was recently a corporate voice from these corporations opposing the extrajudicial execution. Some dramatic move, very important one. So, without any further ado, I'll call on Bishop Pascua to deliver his paper, and then we'll have Father Joe, and then we will have, I promise you, we will have at least a half an hour of Q&A.
Thank you very much, Levi. Good afternoon. Thank you for your presence. The presentation would be aided by visual aid, so I would not be needing to speak a lot. Let the audiovisual speak.
Just when you need it.
That was a productive.
That's a scary title.
And if machine does not work, a man should be able to prevail upon its weakness. Okay, I think it's now. That's Mission Impossible.
It's playing in your computer. It's not playing on the That's
click on the movie, John.
It's called The Alienation of Man from Machine.
We're doing well till Levy touches. He's over 25.
The connection, Levy. The connection is
on the laptop.
And the wire came loose. Yeah.
Oh, you did a full screen again. Can you? And the full screen.
And the full screen.
Yeah. Oh, then someone has to put the mic closer to them. Put it down.
Thank you.
what you just saw are faces of despair and hope of the people in the village called Insaugon in the municipality of St. Bernard, Leyte. Leyte is part of central Philippines in the eastern part. You have also seen the community spirit moving people to help the victims of the tragedy. Let me tell you the story behind these faces. The village is one of the remote areas in the Visayas region of the Philippines. It is situated at the foot of a hill facing a lowland area. It is a typical agricultural community, and rice is the most abundant crop. This once sleepy village became an overnight news on February 17, 2006 because of a mudslide. A tragic mudslide which could have been avoided. Let me give you some figures regarding this preventable nightmare. Various estimates place 1,500 to 3,000 villagers were buried alive in the mudslide. Approximately 100,000 tons of mud from nearby Mount Kanabag rushed down towards 250 hectares of prime agricultural land and the village proper of Insaugon. Today, no one can give an accurate account of how many people died in the tragedy. Demographic reports of the village were buried along with majority of its townsfolk. The numbers provided are the best estimates from the last population census done in May 2000. For 2 weeks, rescuers frantically searched for survivors in the mud. It was heartbreaking to realize that an elementary school full of school children was buried in the mudslide. More than 200 school children and their teachers were covered with mud and never recovered in the site. During rescue operations, cell phone text messages were received from teachers in the buried school saying they were still alive. The text messages were presumably received until their phone batteries went dead. Thousands of other people and hundreds of them children died in the tragic mudslide. The mudslide came swooping down the village in the early morning after days of unceasing rain. As one survivor recounted, "I have heard a rumbling sound. Then suddenly, water and mud came rushing into our house. I was fortunate enough to have gone to our roof, and our roof was washed away." So why did this tragic incident happen? Scientists say that the hill of Insaugon was bound to cascade down the village. Experts claim that St. Bernard is a landslide-prone area. The geological and physical characteristics of the town, steep and denuded mountain slope, loose volcanic bedrock, proximity to an earthquake fault, and pathway of tropical storms and monsoon were noted to have been the main causes for the massive landslide. Almost the same reasons were given for previous disasters, such as the landslides in Panaon Island in southern Leyte, where 154 were left dead and hundreds of residents left homeless. And Aurora, North Quezon, with more than 2,500 dead in 2003 and 2004, respectively. Other mudslide incidents have occurred in the province of Cagayan and the Cordilleras in northern Luzon. It has happened in Quezon province in South Luzon, which is within my jurisdictional area of responsibility as Bishop of the UCCP. And in Surigao, in Mindanao, tragic incidents, which I dread will happen again in the future if nothing decisive is done today. The government scientific agency also pointed out in a post-tragedy hazard assessment that there are other mudslide vulnerable sites all over the Philippines. An expert study indicated the dangers at the doorsteps of the poor people in remote areas of the Philippines. However, the study did not go beyond the identification of the vulnerable sites in the country and did not reveal how such vulnerable sites came to be. How did it happen that there are many mudslide vulnerable areas in the Philippines? Let's look a little bit into Philippine geography. The Philippines is situated near the tropics. It is an archipelago that abounds with life. Experts estimate that the Philippines host thousands of species and subspecies of plants and animals. As you can see in the figure, to give you an idea of how diverse the flora and fauna of the Philippines, listen to this. Scientists all over the world discover an average of one taxon a year. In the Philippines, scientists discover 5 or 6 taxa a year. A very significant number of scientists is studying.
Taxon is one of the taxonomies, one family of, of species.
Thank you, Levi.
they were trying to. I was looking at the audience and they were saying, taxon. That's the taxes, and then taxa.
And so a very significant number of scientists studying the number of plants and animals. The Philippines' total land area. Next slide. Is 300,000 square kilometers. During the Spanish colonial period in the early 1500s, spanning 400 years, the total forest cover decreased to 270,000 square kilometers. During the American colonial period, a mechanized exploitation of resources was introduced. Mechanization was directed towards the extraction of resources in the shortest possible time and with the least capital used for increased profit. The country's vast original forest is part of the condition that shaped the U.S. colonial policy towards the annexation of the Philippines and the plunder of Philippine forest resources. Beginning in 1904, U.S. logging companies started massive pillage of the country's woodlands, introducing to the world what came to be erroneously known as the Philippine mahogany. In less than 3 decades,
American logging concessionaires were able to erase 47% or approximately 9.9 million hectares of old growth forest. The U.S. colonial policy instituted the policy and culture of plundering forest effectively, that in the 1950s, the Philippine government peddled the idea that forest lands are wastelands unless used for economic purposes. This, my sisters and brothers, resulted in the rapid depletion of natural resources, the very fabric of our environment. Up to this time, the country's forest resources and consequently the number of plants and animals have decreased significantly. As revealed by this table, the remaining primary growth forest in the Philippines is a measly 8,000 square kilometers. So, how significant is the decrease in hectares of primary forests? It means that deforestation has loosened the soil as resources are extracted, and that the primary vegetation has been replaced by either agricultural crops or is stripped altogether by open pit mining activities, which leads us to another point. Why are these destructive practices allowed by Philippine government? The Philippine government, from the start of its independence, quote-unquote, from foreign colonizers, created laws or was forced to develop laws to cater to its former colonizers. Let me just cite one controversial law, the Philippine Mining Act of 1995. It states that 100% foreign-owned mining firms can exploit the mineral resources of the country with tax incentives and are given priority in the use of resources for mining purposes. They also have prior rights for the use of water resources. This law virtually gives mining firms the license to destroy our environment. Another boggling case is the lifting of the logging ban imposed in 2004 after the series of killer landslides in the country late that year. What is more spurious is the reinstatement of a logging concession to an Arroyo critic turned political ally in the province of Samar in an area declared as a protected natural park hosting vast assemblage of rich biodiversity of flora and fauna found only in the Philippines. The Arroyo government did the same thing in Quirino province. Such actions constitute a return of patronage politics in logging. Thus, the Philippine government's laws and actions are virtually geared towards providing resources for foreign entities and for the political elite, rather than for its people. One can argue that there are safeguards to the law, but I assure you, these so-called safety nets are just sweeteners to hide the bitter truth. Scientific experts assert in an assessment of a century of forest rehabilitation in the Philippines published last year, that the underlying causes of deforestation in the Philippines can be traced to structural forces such as, letter A, the elite's control of wealth in the lowlands and the uplands, B, large-scale exploitation of forest resources for private gain, and C, inequitable access to land and assets for the majority. The history of resource extraction and utilization of the Philippines' natural resources is a story of exploitation and conquest of its people. The Philippines remain a cheap source of raw materials, benefiting industrialized countries while maintaining its role as the dumping ground of highly subsidized imported surplus goods and capital. This perpetuates the agrarian character of the Philippine society. The cycle of deadening poverty, people's resistance, and political repression will remain entrenched in Philippine society for as long as the problem of the backward agrarian economy of the country continues, and for as long as it is subservient to industrialized nations remain through its local elite. Efforts to protect the environment will just be palliatives. Local opposition to the destructive resource extraction practice is met with military might, and activists who risk their life in fighting for the political, economic, and cultural rights of the people, which includes the right to land and resources, are extrajudicially killed. We have that discussion this morning. These activists delay the government's outright sale of the country. It became necessary to silence them. I will not delve on this anymore, as my colleagues have discussed and will continue to discuss about it in some other occasions. Does the government's policy of catering to the greed for profit and to the wants of foreign countries, rather than meeting its people's needs, cause a life of misery among the people? The people's right to life is blatantly violated. The Ginsaugun tragedy was preventable and should not have happened if only the policy of the Philippine government were genuinely for the development of the people of the Philippines. But for as long as the perspective of greed and super profit remains the principle of governance, natural resources destruction will occur. For as long as the need for fundamental changes in all spheres of national life do not take place, the full scope of human rights will be far from realization. As the environmental group in the Philippines called Kalikasan, literally translated as nature, Kalikasan, aptly said, it is already common knowledge that the Arroyo administration's central concern is to preserve itself in power, that in situations like this, referring to the mudslides, we are expecting it to again absolve itself of any responsibility, blame Mother Nature and the lowly upland settlers as the culprit of these landslides. End of quote. Allow me now to invite you to help us spread the word that the Insaugon could have been prevented. Spread the word that a people of great hope are continually marching on to the beat of a different drum. Be a voice that will call upon your congressmen and senators to condemn the continuing destruction of the Philippines' natural resources and human life. You may want to write to our president in the Philippines and take part in the growing voice against this avoidable situation. You may also want to consider building a chain of solidarity that will advocate for a policy review and the scrapping of the Philippine Mining Act, and affirm with a yes to a nationalist and pro-people economy based on a balance between environmental sustainability and genuine social development. Come, sisters and brothers, friends, be a part of God's act in bringing about a world that is just and humane, a safe home for all children. Thank you very much. Mabuhay po tayong lahat.